This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Bigger Picture. You're about to hear an edited recording of the webinar titled Moving Forward with Education Progress Update. So this was the fourth of seven webinars which focused on the Malaysia Education Blueprint and its implementation or lack thereof. This series was a collaboration between BFM Media, EdUnity Foundation and G25 Malaysia.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our fourth Education Awareness Blueprint webinar. I'm Philip C., your moderator, and thank you for joining us. Now, let's get down to business, because today we focus squarely on the future with today's series, Moving Forward with Education Progress Update. Now, we have two very special guests today to share their insights and perspectives. So please warmly welcome Datuk Satina Said Saleh. She's a council member of the National Education Advisory Council for 2018 to 2020 session. Welcome, Datuk Satina.
Thank you.
Now, we also want to welcome our second guest, Shanas Al-Sadat.
Hi. Shanas. Hi, Phil.
Hi. Good evening. Now, she's the chairperson of LEPAD Services, but you're also on the board of multiple education-related entities, Teach for Malaysia, Yayasan Amir Minda. Let's just get straight to business, because today's topic, as I repeat again, Moving Forward with Education Progress Update. Now, I want to emphasize on this progress update, and we cannot be remiss if we don't talk about the pandemic, because truly the pandemic has devastated our country, the economy, the healthcare, our social infrastructure, and more so our education system. And we see the metrics that there's regression across the board. But I want to ask you particularly, Datuk Satina, how can we turn this pandemic from a crisis to an opportunity to reset?
I think, first of all, we need to really look at what had taken place the last almost 2 years now, since we started closing school. School were closed initially, and then it was reopened, and again, closed. And of course, at the same time, we are also talking about what have we learned from the pandemic. And we know that during the pandemic, and we see students are actually being exposed to new things totally. In fact, there were, I must say that not all students were able to adapt. Mm-hmm. They actually faced very, very, they were totally affected by the pandemic itself, because they can't go to school, they can't meet their friends, they can't meet their teachers, they are studying in the house. And also at the same time, Zoom can also cause a lot of fatigue, you know, Zoom fatigue, they call it. And these are the things that we have seen. But notwithstanding that, there were a lot of good things that were happening during that time. And I must congratulate the Ministry of Education for their tremendous amount of work that they put in for the public school, because we are talking about 10,000 schools. So they put in a lot of effort. They had their sort of a war room, that's what I was told. And they tried their very best. But at the same time, we cannot address everything. So I think in that context, I would say, I think one thing that I noticed, parents tend to be part and parcel of learning.
Right.
I know my friends, you know, in fact, my daughter-in-law, one of them, and she also sat with her children, you know, to see what is going on, and many of the schools that I'm involved. So this actually, what happened, education has become part and parcel of community, owned by the community, not just teachers in the classroom. So that is one aspect I think we need to leverage on that, and how do we turn that into opportunity?
Yeah, because very interesting point about how you now see parents getting more invested in the education of their children, right? Because they're actually learning from home at the moment, right?
That's right.
Yes. You know, you were talking about the war room, where they were saying that they basically mobilized and tried to solve some of the biggest problems that were happening at the time. What do you think they did well and didn't do well in the war room?
I won't say they did well or they didn't do well, because I know not all divisions were involved. This is what I told, because I'm no longer in the Ministry of Education, even though I was once there. But at the same time, I think to reach out to all the schools is not an easy task. Philip, I sit on the board of a few international schools. So I do get in touch with all of them. And how did they manage those schools? It was really mind-boggling. So I must say that I say kudos to the Ministry of Education for whatever they did, but probably they couldn't do enough. But most importantly, I say kudos to the parents. Mm. What parents did and what the community did, I think that is most important to me. Yeah.
Shanas, do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I definitely agree that as
become more community based. I absolutely, I think, and it's, you know, it's a, you have to do it, you know, so you're kind of forced into it a little bit.
Yep.
But I want to go back a little bit about it being a pandemic, a crisis, and a war room. That's kind of like, absolutely, it's a war. It becomes war, right? And you're talking about opportunity to reset. So the question is that, I agree, it's an opportunity to reset. But reset what? What are we resetting? Right. I mean, last few weeks, as you said, I think we've been talking about blueprint. We've been talking about what we're trying to implement the blueprint. My summary of that is that, you know, we know where we are heading, but then I think we took a bit of a scenic route, slow, a bit, you know, like turtle. And then
meandering through the highway, the coastal highways. Got it.
I know, yes, you know, maybe using steam engine train instead, you know. So, right. So we're not exactly where we need to be, actually. Right. This is pre-pandemic. Had we done what we said we're going to do at the blueprint, we would have been in a better place when pandemic hits us, because we were working towards independent students and independent learners. You know, we were working towards students that has holistic outcome. If we do get that, I think it's better, because the moment pandemic hit, everything falls into the child now, because the child has to drive their learning, right? But we didn't. So the pandemic is a bit of a double whammy for us, in a sense. So right now, we are thinking about how do we recover from where we are right now, the opportunity to reset. What do we need to reset? In my mind, we need to reset our attitude and the mindset here. The focus must be the child first, and then the teacher who needs to be the one fighting this war. Okay. So I think in the last 12 months, I think we should have been spending like 90% of the time thinking about how do we equip our teachers? Because when it's time of war, it's not the time for you to throw away all your weapons. It's time for you to think which of your weapons that's most relevant, and then, you know, and not try to develop new ones, because surely you kalah the war, right? If you try to develop, right? So, you know, so yeah, and then how do you get it in the hand of the teachers? Because that's the most important part right now. What I feel.
So tell me the weapons. What are the weapons you're referring to here?
Well, I mean, okay. Even before the pre-pandemic, I mean, we have always talking about pedagogical transformation, right, in the system. Because if you want to go into independent learning, you want to go into a positive learning environment, you want to go more student-centered, you know, and there are two key critical pedagogical, I think it's been talked about in the last few weeks as well, around assessment for learning, around differentiation. Mm-hmm. These are important to actually maximize the learning gains of each of the student. This is important even with pandemic. It's definitely good to have, but with pandemic, it's critical to have.
Super important. Dr. Satina, I want to get your perspective, because, you know, we are so enamored by this blueprint. It's got its clear timeline, end of 2025. We only have 4 years left. It's really about 1,300 days left. The clock is ticking. You know, how do we turn this ship around? You know, or should we even not be too fixated with the 2025 deadline?
Yes, I think the one key word that I would say is focus. That is one. We need to focus. And I think we must remember when the education blueprint, I was very lucky that I was also involved in the initial stage when we reviewed the education system. We realized at the end of it, when the whole education blueprint was going to be written, and we realized actually that there are two factors that actually that determine how the system of education will be successful or otherwise. One is teacher, second is teacher, and third is the leadership in the school. So I think in order, we can have a beautiful, I know the education blueprint that we have is one of the best that anyone can say. You know, they can criticize whatever. I think it is an amazing document. But a document will not play any role if it is not used, if it is not delivered, if it is not monitored in a way it should be done. And I feel this is one aspect that the Ministry of Education, I personally, because I was one part of the Ministry of Education, but now my concern is only the students, the teachers, no longer the Ministry of Education. So I think they need to focus. They need to look at, we want to deliver quality education. We want to deliver efficient teachers with proper competencies and so on. They need to be retrained and they need to be aware. And at the same time, information must go down correctly. Correctly meaning you have to have a whole mission and vision and shared actually aspiration in order for you to deliver the right content of this education blueprint. I think we are just about short of 4.5 years. It is there's a lot of things to be done, and actually I have fear in my heart, because so many things needs to be done. I'm not even talking about all those international examination, whatever it is. I'm just talking about kemenjadian murid. I think we use the word kemenjadian murid, and also teachers, how teachers can continue to play a role as a teacher, facilitator or educator so that they will not be burnt out.
So I want to bring Shahnaz in because you're kind of implying, look, the issue isn't the plan. It's really great. It's a great plan. But the issue is implementation and execution. And even more so now as a result of the pandemic and that we have such a tight timeline. Shahnaz, in your view, what are the focus and priorities that we need to sort out in the next 1,000 over days?
Well, yeah, so if we have been taking a stroll, right now we need to sprint, right? Okay, because you know, we only left like less of the time. And I think what has been a little bit puzzling around the strolling thing is that it's not that they didn't have a signboard, you know, like I have to say this because Trust Schools program is Ministries of Education's program to find that model to actually implement what is said in the blueprint, right? Kemeja dan murid, as you say, and teachers' competencies. And that has been proven. They can see it. And you heard Dr. Habibah herself who said, yes, that's what it is. But they still didn't want to follow the signboard. They still want to create their own jalan. So, you know, because of that, right now, to me, it's just like, hey, the reset is that we only have 4 years left. I think let's put aside ego. Let's put aside, political positioning. Let's put aside all that. Let's just learn and from what we already have in the system that actually has worked so that we can then take it to the next level. And really, we need to focus right now, right? Because we have 10,200 schools and there are two things in the standards that very clear we need to focus. Leadership of the school and the quality of learning and teaching. And we can do this because Trust School has proven it can be done in 3 years. So if we have 4 years, we can do it.
So give me a tangible example because you both have the same perspective, which is teachers, and the leadership in the school, which is the principal, right? Two in one. Give me a clear, tangible example of what we can do now to kind of revamp and reset properly. That was Satina?
As we said just now, focus. I think the Ministry of Education right now cannot be, doing other things other than wanting to get the results out. I think we can't actually focus on other things. Ministry of Education, your core business is education. Your core business is having the right education for our children and also to retrain your teachers or do CPD for your teachers. So I think this is the core thing because, and at the same time, you need to also involve other stakeholders. Philip, I think now education does not belong to the Ministry of Education anymore. It does not belong to the government anymore. Education belongs to the whole, how many population? 33 million in this country, probably how many of them are adults? It belongs to them. Every parent, they want to know what type of education their children are going to have. They can query the government, you know, but it's not, no longer, the Ministry of Education no longer own education. You need to be open and engage them. Engage them. And there are many, many, like what Shahnaz was saying, you know, Trust School program is a proven program that has actually, we did it. I was part of it when I was an advisor at Kazana. I know work with Shahnaz. And we can see this whole thing has happened. You can see how the student, instead of not wanting to go to school, they come to school. The parents come to school to clean the toilet. How did they do it? It is amazing, Philip, if you see this. And I don't think the Trust School program belongs to Yayasan Ami or Kazana or LIPAD. It belongs to the Ministry of Education. Let us own it together. And learn from whatever that's done. You don't have to feel egoistic about it. I think there's a little bit of issue with the ministry. Let me finish this because I want to say this. They were my colleagues before. I think the problem with our people, including me then, you know, we tend to have this issue of not wanting people from our side to come in and tell us what to do. This is one actually issue. Not all of them. The higher probably the leaders are okay. But those in the middle, they tend to have a little bit of issue with that. I think this type of minds totally need to change.
Because Singong, is it that for her that all the hard work I've done basically is being taken over by someone else? Is that the feeling they get through?
It shouldn't be that way because it's not taken over by anybody. Actually, we want to give back to the children. They all do not belong to us. We teachers. I was a teacher for many, many years. At the end of it, I know it's not me as a teacher. I think the children, you need to put them. Shana's actually an accountant, a lawyer. What is she doing in education? Because you are passionate about education. I think all teachers.
Well, Shana's, I think, made very astute points. She's really emphasizes twice, right? We've gone on this detour. We've gone on this scenic route, taking too long of a time. And it's really a point that there's too many distractions. They're just not focused on the jalan or to the signboard, right? So Shahnaz, you know, what has been, in your observation, the distractions that have taken place that you really feel, can you just focus on the teachers and the quality so far? Are there any tangible distractions you see now?
Well, in the current situation right now, what I can see is that, again, you know, I have to say, I think I talked a bit in some other places about post-2018. It's a bit of twilight zone for me because I don't quite know. My high order thinking skill, maybe not high enough, like, because I cannot connect their strategies, right? I can only see what's coming out. For example, during the time when everybody kind of needs help, the 420,000 people are battling this war and actually require support, because to be fair to them, you know, it's so destructive. You have to actually help them support. But instead, Ministry of Education announced they want to actually recruit 18,000 new people who doesn't even know how to firefight and want to train them in that period of time to get them to be a quality level. For me, we should have then focused actually on getting and data from Trust Schools Test Us, and 25% of our teachers actually have that reasonable level of skills that we need to do the recovery. But what we do, we should just focus the last 12 months to get another 25 or 30% so that you get to a tipping point, right? Of the system. And this can be done. We already have this. The tried and tested methodology is all there. It's just to get it done. So the distraction is things that I cannot explain because I'm just seeing, like, why are we doing it? You know, for example, quality of education is the core business of MOE. Why are they setting up a new yayasan? Yayasan Didik Negara, that's not their core business. So now they set up budget, they're going to recruit a new CEO. There's so many yayasan they can work with already. Yayasan Hasana, Yayasan TFM Foundation, Pintar Foundation, Yayasan Peneraju Pendidikan. I can name a whole lot. They can just work with these yayasans, right? Why do they have to set their own, for example? So these are distractions to me because they're not focusing on what needs to happen.
I think this is such a pertinent point because come this Monday, we're having the 12th Malaysia plan. But let's be honest, right? The issue here isn't cash. It's culture, it's competency, it's the courage to be extremely single-minded in meeting students' aspirations, right? So it's the worry that they're just going to dilute more capital into education and this will even cause more distractions for us to be single-minded and focused. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes. the only thing that I'm a little bit bothered about is just because from the digital issue, because of the issue of the pandemic, we do find that we do need some infrastructure help, especially around the device and connectivity. And I think that will be a fair infrastructure investments. But anything other than that, I think should go towards supporting the school in developing the soft side of leadership and teachers' competencies, because I think that will have a longer term returns, I think, from a country perspective. So I think if we do that, then I think, we'll be better off.
You're listening to an edited recording of the fourth episode from our education webinar series titled Moving Forward with Education Progress Update. And this was a collaboration between BFM Media, EdUnity Foundation and G25 Malaysia. We'll be back shortly on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Bigger Picture. This is an edited recording of the fourth episode from our education webinar series, which was a collaboration between BFM Media, EdUnity Foundation and G25 Malaysia. So this episode sought to see if Malaysia's education blueprint was still relevant today or if we needed a new one. So here's more from that conversation featuring host Philip C and guests Dato' Satina Said Saleh, who is a former member of the National Education Advisory Council, and Shahnaz Al-Sadat, who is a chairperson of Leap Ed Services.
Well, we've got a question from Nina, and I want to pose this to Dato' Satina because I think you'd be the right person to answer, having been a teacher as well, right at the bottom, right? And she's asking, does it have to go down or is it time to build capacity and empower schools and teachers so initiatives can happen ground up, right? Let's not just rely on essentially what the system does, but let's just pick up all these amazing ideas bottom up and just germinate from the bottom up. What do you think about that, Dato' Satina?
I cannot agree with her more because I think it is high time we empower our teachers, our PPD officers, our principals in the schools to recognize their issues, their problems and solve them. We teach them problem solving. Who else can solve the problem? The people in the Ministry of Education, they are doing policies, but they are not on the ground all the time. They will not know the actual happening in the school. I want to share this, Philip, because actually I'm also involved with Design for Change Malaysia. What we did to the schools actually in Kelantan, we empowered those teachers to create great things. And they created a lot of things. And of course, we just trained them for about a month or two over the weekend. And we brought them to Rome, 2019. And they were just amazing. You know why? It is empowerment. You have to empower them. You have to allow them to actually create certain things and not telling them what to do from the Ministry of Education or even from the Jabatan Pendidikan Negeri. Let them do whatever they want to do. But when you empower them, you give them that power, they feel very proud and they feel they own the school. And these are their children. So I definitely agree with Nina. And that will come to decentralization at the end of it. I think we are too greedy with power. You want to keep everything in the Ministry of Education. You know, as if we are God, you know. I use this word. But the thing is that it's not fair to the children. It's really not fair to teachers. We have to care about students. We have to care about teachers. That's all that matters now.
Shana, you're nodding vigorously.
Well, yes, absolutely. And, you know, I do want to highlight that. I think one of the good things that has happened in the last 10 years is MOE issuing a standard quality Pendidikan Malaysia Generation 2. Because the policy and the process that's actually written there is really very aligned with trying to empower the school and actually making it developmental, you know, rather than inspectorate, you know, come check, Mara. Okay. So the idea is the process is actually for them to be able to. But we didn't follow through on the implementation. And this is what I said by focus, right? Because you already have something good. So let's follow through with the implementation. One of the issues, and I hear, I think Puan Khadijah mentioned about lack of data. It's not lack of data. Data coming out from the ears, but data is not authentic. That's our problem.
In the process, garbage in, garbage out.
So you are planning on data that's not telling you the reality, right? So in Trustful, so I mean, we have to work with the school leaders and teachers, and actually we run through with them baselining this data, okay, again, the same indicators, for example. And I can just tell you our data, on average, they are always 40 or 50% less than what they have been reporting, okay? The problem here is, okay, I'm not saying that our teachers are liars and all. Please don't make it a headline, right? I'm just saying that the system over time, I think, kind of not being able to do this evidentiary data at the quality level that is actually needed. Right. And when school leaders and teachers actually recognize how that needs to look like, then they can plan better. They can target better, you know, and that's why we just need to focus on these two standards, re-baseline it, give amnesty to these teachers in the next two review periods. Because right now, how come last year we say 80%, now it's 40%, you know, and then the conversation go crazy. Just give amnesty, re-baseline everybody, work together, let them come up with where their targets need to be, where their plan is, and everybody support them in their plan, not to dictate. Okay? Do this, no, right? So it's, you know, it's like a menu, you can select what you need, but it's based on your need.
But it's this culture of how you use the data, isn't it? Because now we're just so fixated with using it for rewarding you performance management, whereas what you want to do actually is to use the data to help them become better teachers, deliver better outcomes for students, right? That really is a culture change. And as you said, the amnesty. Yeah. And amnesty is sounds like the right thing. But Dato' Satina, is it easy to do an amnesty?
Yeah, it's not impossible, indefinitely, because I think at the end of it, we want to achieve what we have targeted to do. That's all that matters. But Philippe, I really would like to talk about the data a little bit. I want to touch a little bit on that. The Ministry of Education, one of the division in the Ministry of Education is the EPRD, Planning and Research Division. They collect data all the time. Now, not only EPRD, but other divisions also collect data, like Bahagian Sekolah and so on. But we would like to ask this question, what do they do with the data? I think, as Shana said, data can come out from your ears also. But what do they do? And why is it so difficult for us to even get data from the Ministry of Education? Now, Jabatan Statistik, they are very open already. You can always get data from them. I think we have the best, one of the best Ketua Pengarah, whatever they call it. You know, I really like that style of doing. But Ministry of Education, I think the opportunity here, moving forward, I think they have to start to relook. If you collect data, it's a lot of work to be done. What are you going to do with the data? You need to have the right people to be able to interpret, to understand, to deep dive into the data, and then do inferences, and then use them to formulate new policies that will improve the system. If the data is just being left there and not being used, or cannot even understand, they can't even understand, it is of no point. And I'm sure one of the data that they would have collected is the, you know, school-based system. you know, examination and all these things. So we want to know what happened for the last 2 years, 3 years. If you have done it, did you do any survey, research? We want to know, have that been successful? What the parents had to say, what the students had to say. From there, only the public, you know, people like us, all of us, we want to know, how can we help you to improve the system? Allow us also to speak.
But it's a secret, right, Dato? It's a secret, right?
I don't know whether it's a secret or it is the data, as you said. So it's not totally, would say, you
clean,
know.
Clean. I guess that's the word.
Clean, clean. Probably clean. Not totally, because it is forbidden. Now, when we were in education in NEAC, I must say there were 11 of us, we finished last year. We wanted to get data. We couldn't get data.
Do you
think
really? So let's marry both concepts. The decentralization that we talked about earlier and this concept of data. Do you think decentralized data is the way forward? Where we get the schools to own and manage the data, and then they basically manage, and then the teams on the ground help them own it so that there's greater ownership. Shana, do you agree with that idea?
Absolutely, that's what Trust School does, Bill. Okay?
Yeah.
That is exactly what Trust School does. So basically, the data that they feel, whatever data is for their purpose of improving the learning and teaching and then school management.
Right.
So the question we ask, if you inputting all this data, are you using it? You're not using it, don't input data. Okay? For example, right? Because they've been a lot, they input data, somebody in EPRD is looking at it, they don't even know what happens to it. They spend days and nights doing it. So, but for Trust School, we say data that you collect is for you to use to improve how you're actually teaching and learning. That's the most important part, actually. Reporting is secondary as far as we it should be, right? The same thing with a school quality. You know, the data is for you to know what do you need to do, where are you and all that. It's not for you to report to district, state, just for report. But it's you using it. So it's really a change of culture.
Yeah.
Opportunity. I mean, that is opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, this point about using the data and having the skills on the ground to do it, you know, let's be honest, I think not everybody has the capacity and competency to analyze and harness the data. And that's when you need to build partnerships. You need to work with civil society and NGOs.
Right.
To basically do that, because they probably have some skills to help. You know, have you seen examples where the ministry has been open to share data at that level or on the ground, or does it never happen really?
I've not seen it happen, because I think to a certain extent, I don't know, for whatever reason, I could be wrong now, you know, I've left the ministry quite some time, but they are rather secretive about the data, even from not only to the people outside, even from one division to another. You need to write in, you know. You need to write in first if you want to get a, you know, a set of data from one division A to division B. So I can't understand. Probably things have changed. I do not know. But it's happened during my time. I'm just wondering, what's the use of having data if you're not able to use them?
Well, my experience is I span about 500 schools, because there's Trust Schools and then there are Teach for Malaysia schools, for example. I do find that, I mean, if you are working with the schools and actually building their capacity and capabilities, it's possible. And I think other social enterprises too, like Pemimpin, GSL, you know, Aros Academy and all that. So you can use the data there. I think the issue with it is just because, if you write in the blueprint to say you give school autonomy, then you need to give school autonomy, right?
Mm.
Right.
And then the schools can decide how they can syndicate and engage, essentially.
Exactly, right? So at this current stage, since we need to sprint, to me, we have a lot of these people who want to help. That's why I said, so if we focus, again, I'm back to focusing on leadership and the quality of learning teaching. The school need to do this, and you're right, they need some capacity building support, okay? You know, like the Trust Schools get that capacity support from LeapEd, right? So if all the schools need, have the plan, need to support, then unleash that open to all these, you know, the, and not the NGOs, the NPOs, the social enterprises that really, really want to help the ministry, right? You know, and the one that have been raising money from private sector interest of, in the interest of the ministry. I mean, if you actually work collaboratively, then I think we'll make it in the next 4 years. But if we don't, I don't think we'll make it, right?
Yeah, I mean, this was a point
Sorry, Philip. I do agree. That's one thing that I just need to point as well, you know, point it out. They do need data at the Ministry of Education, especially at the EPRD, because EPRD, they do macro policy. You know, they formulate policies at EPRD, especially. They are supposed to be the secretariat for it. So they do need data in order, you know, you have to do informed decision that is by data. So they do have people who can analyze those data, but it's just that they are rather secretive about it. So you can't say that we don't give the data straight to the Ministry of Education. They can give, but the usage of the data must be at the level of the school and the PPD or whatever it is.
Yeah, so this data is a symptom of a bigger problem, right? Which is a lack of engagement with people outside the ministry. Essentially, that's the problem here. Actually, it's potentially there. It's not perfect. They do kind of inflate the numbers a bit. But there's a fundamental issue that there's no collaboration or cooperation across the board. And Chaco asks us this question, right? Why is it so difficult not to just have a round table with major stakeholders involved and have a frank discussion for people both within and without the government, what it takes to really make a difference? And should we have that conversation at the top now, or just decide let's just go down on the baseline schools and all that to make that work?
Good question, but you have to ask from the right people. I mean, we are so willing, we are waiting for it. In fact, we've been asking for it. But if the accountability here rests, unfortunately, with the Ministry of Education, right? You know, we are supporting actors, you know, they are leading actors, right? So we supporting actors.
Philip, I must say this.
Go ahead, Dr. Tina.
Yes, I need to add up a little bit, Philip. You know, once upon a time, I have to use this word once upon a time. I feel that I'm very old already now. We used to have a lot of engagement with the people outside. I know one of my very good friends, Mr. Ramanathan, who used to be with the union, they used to work with us, you know. Whatever decision, whatever even policy we want to make in the Ministry of Education, this is actually way back during Tan Sri Wan Zahid's time. We always engage them. We have to talk to them because their children want to come to our school. But I think what is happening now, this trust deficit things, as you know, is totally there in the Ministry of Education. I know I can say this. I think my colleagues and my former colleagues can get angry with me. It's all right. But I think we need to learn to trust others from outside. I think I like Shana's, I do work with many NGOs, many associations outside, you know. And the last one I'm working with, Yayasan Rhythm Foundation, where they do a lot of great things with poor children, Tamil children. So these people are willing to come in and help free of charge. You know, they don't even charge. And Yayasan Hasana, Yayasan whatever, Yayasan, so many of them, Saim Dabi and so on, they're just willing to come in and help. But I think the only thing that Ministry of Education can do, just invite them. Invite them. Actually, we even suggested when we were in the NEAC, Philip, on the public-private partnership, we even suggested probably the private sectors can train the officers in the Ministry of Education to understand what PPP is all about so that we can do it over the weekend. They will learn how to handle that type of partnership, you know, that I hope they can talk about it later.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the need for internal communications, and that's so important. Now, we got a really good question from Shazana, right? Where she's, I think, been listening to all the webinars so far, and she said, every speaker in this series has spoken about problems with implementation. What is a good blueprint? But does the lack of follow-through indicate issues with how the blueprint was drawn up if there wasn't any buy-in from all the implementing players? Is this a design issue, basically, where what I think Shazana is implying, right? Where when we develop the blueprint, there wasn't enough buy-in from all those people who were implementing it. Shana, your thoughts?
Well, I'm just laughing because, you know, as I say, both TRUSCO program and blueprint are Ministry of Education's really, right? And TRUSCO is actually featured in the blueprint, for example. But blueprint was actually written, Datuk, you please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not really part of the blueprint team. I was actually helping ministry to actually run the labs in order to, if you remember this, to actually go underneath each of the blueprint initiative and actually go to the implementation, what actually needs to be done.
Right.
So I think from an engagement, I mean, this is just my personal opinion, from engagement, from inputs, I think it's been done. Beratus-ratus, so many of them actually were involved. You know, and the same thing with trust schools. I mean, when people say trust school is an outside program, actually for me, I'm a bit like, it's not. Because, yeah, maybe Lee Ed, the one holding the pen as a social enterprise, but guess what? We didn't do this in the lab in America or the lab of UK. We actually design it in the lab here with the schools, with our teachers, with our leaders, if ministry officials and Datuk Beri Ratus-Ratus juga involved. So, I disagree, unfortunately, because I think the engagement all been done.
There was.
The question is just that I think the implementation, yeah, we lost our way a little bit because I think we are too checking inputs and outputs. I think we didn't step back and ask the question, hey, are we closer to the outcomes or not? Which we have written in the blueprint. You know what I mean?
But that's the point of PADU, isn't it? To help us like just make sure that we keep ourselves honest and also help us take a step back, isn't it?
Yes, and you heard Puan Khadija last week, you know, about it. because unfortunately, I still come back to, there's a leadership that's required overall. Just like trust schools, when we talk about leadership, you immediately say the guru besar, the principal. Actually, no. Trust school, the leadership is actually the team. Okay? It's the leadership plus their senior assistants. They work as a team. Same thing at the ministry. The ministry, the leadership must be a team. It's not an individual game. Okay? And I think that's a little bit missing. You heard Khadija saying that, you know, she needs authority. Authority needs to come with if they have a shared vision, if they have a shared priority, then it'll work, right?
Mm. But, Adriana, your thoughts?
I want to go into the slightly different direction. I think when we did the blueprint, there were a couple of other things that was also a policy that was also implemented. One of them actually that what they call it is the New Deal, the Bai'ah. The Bai'ah actually is a reward given to schools, teachers, principals, whatever it is, you know, the whole school. So these were given based on the performance, how you perform in your school, how the principal could play a role and teachers as well. I look at that as something that actually took away, was taken away the actual, you know, intention of the education, the blueprint itself. Because what would happen, people become dishonest. I'm sorry to say this. People become dishonest. You tend to want your school to be better than any other school. So you tend to probably use not saying the right thing. I don't want to use the word lie, you know. And I'm glad that it is no longer there. I'm glad it is no longer there. But I think that was one aspect. And secondly, information do not actually get to the very bottom. Those who are implementing them, they do not get the actual gist of why am I doing this. You know, can you imagine you are doing something, you just ask you to do, you just do. You really do not know at the end of it, what am I going supposed to achieve? Like looking at the system of education. When people talk about system of education, we talk about what is this trust school came into contemporary that time. Many of the officers, we cannot blame them. They were not exposed. They don't understand why are these people coming in and doing these type of things, you know. What are they trying to achieve? We are doing all these jobs already in the school. They can't see the difference because they were not exposed. They were not told. Likewise, I have asked many of them, many teachers, whether you have read the education blueprint. Many of them said they don't understand some of those things they cannot understand. Probably one or two they might have picked it up, you know. But sadly, probably information just went to the top people but did not go down. Probably, I don't know, unless they have done it, you know. Philip, I wouldn't be able to say that. But you cannot say that implementation. I think there are also other factors there.
So you make a very pertinent point, because we always talk about the need for strategic communications. And that was also discussed quite a lot in previous webinars as well. But your point is a bit more subtle, that it's internal communications, but how you trickle it down. Because if you're going to cost correct the plan, you need to get everybody on the ship rowing in the same direction. And so you need to get the internal communications happening now. How difficult is it to get internal alignment and to do that cascading down, all the way down to the mid-level and down to the teachers? You know, Shanas, and what's your experience, you know?
I think it's actually a great challenge, because it's a huge ministry. I know people talk about teachers, which is 420,000, but I think there's another at least 100,000 plus, can I talk, or the officials.
Yeah.
You know, easily 600,000 actually people. And I think the point that we need to, how do we ensure, I don't think it's for the sake of communication, and I want to be fair actually, Padu at one time actually really to me did very good from a communication perspective, because you know the blueprints were just way too tebal, you know, so they're really good about taking, right, you know, the highlights and the points. It actually does go down to actually see that. I think that improved a lot. I think the DG, Dr. Amin Senin, actually improved the way that he communicates a strategic plan for us. So those things happening. I mean, you know, and I think that has improved. But I think the communication need to come to follow through, the word follow through with the action, right? And the truth is, you need to move this 500,000 towards the same direction. So the culture change need to kind of be like the same direction. And it actually can be done, because for us, when we say adopt trust school, we don't mean adopt trust school as what it is now, because right now it's external resourcing. Yep. We have to take external resource to actually do it, because to demonstrate, right? You know, but 80% of them are locals. They're ex-teachers. Where do you think they come from? Ministry of Education, right? Whether they retire or they resign, we train them, they become our advisors. If we can train them outside MOE, we can also train them when they are in MOE, right? Okay. Yeah. So that's our proposal. Because government is paying $40 billion a year for salaries, right? I think you should just invest a little bit more just to get them capable to do this. So the communication will fully follow through with action. Then you will start seeing results. Because if not communication, then it just stops there, right? You know, nice, beautiful graphics and that's it.
And that communication must come with clear leadership, you know. And I want to bring Dato' Satina into this point about leadership here in the Ministry of Education. And it was alluded before in earlier webinars, right, about what is the issue with leadership in the ministry. And in your view, it's because it's disjointed with short tenures, because they kind of, you know, do, and then 1.5 years, they kind of retire. Is that a central problem in your view, Dato' Satina?
I would say yes. I think because we government officials, government servants, whether they are education people or PTDs or health or whatever it is, you tend to follow your time when you can get promoted. So in education, it's even worse because I think I know now the Deputy Director General, what is it, Datin Sri Nozamani, was promoted to be the DG. Until now, there is no replacement for her. Why is it? Why it took such a long time to get a replacement for a deputy DG? You mean to say out of 400 over teachers, you can't get one? That is totally, it's disaster to me. And another aspect I feel, you tend to have people who are so old to become DG. You give them to become DG, for example, just DG or deputy DG at a very old age. I mean, they are good. They are experienced, you know. But the thing is that if it's just going to put them there for the sake of 1.5 years, like Dr. Habibah, for example, she came in there during the pandemic and then she left just like that, you know. Not many people even know about it. And she was a very capable person doing all, managing all this thing. So I think it's about time we have to really look at how this this system works, you know, whereby that we can also look at the younger generation to be trained to become leaders at the end of it. And also, I also was mentioning about a few other things that we wanted to do when we were in NEAC, like even capitalizing on the Sekolah Berasrama Penuh in actually getting proper leaders in the Ministry of Education. But I think one aspect we need to do, actually, we can't all the time look at you have reached this level, only you can be promoted. So it took, I do not know, these type of things I think is bad. But when we don't have good leaders, either in the Ministry of Education or in the school, you will have a lot of problems because leaders are the key determinant factors in whatever, whichever organization you are, including a house.
Absolutely. I mean, leadership is what differentiates between pockets of excellence versus a system of excellence. And that's what we are all striving for, right? Not to just see pockets of excellence here. And Shanaz, in your view, what are the other issues with respect to leadership that you see in the Ministry of Education? Because you kind of mentioned about it, that there's a bit of alignment that's necessary as well, isn't it, among the top front bench as well?
Yes, I don't know how to solve this problem. I just can tell you what the problem is. experience in the last 10 years, I've worked very closely with 6 director generals, including the current one, whose runway is going to end next year, right? So this is very, very short runways. They are excellent individuals, you know, great educators, very professionally competent. But the question is that they have to operate the whole thing. There's 6 KSU as well. Didn't work with all of them, but 6 KSUs and 6 ministers also didn't work with all of them. So at any point in time, there is the minister, there's the KSU, there's the DG, and then all the deputies, about 5 or 6 of them. This to me is like an arrowhead, right? Arrowhead. I have not find any time in that 10 years that I can sincerely said, you know, that is actually a strong team that has a shared vision, that have a shared priorities. Okay. Yes. And I'm saying this as objectively as I can because I used to head HR in Kazana. So because I don't mean individuals. I think individuals, they're all capable, you know, but how do we get them to have this? Because it's so critical given that it's such a big ship, right? You need to shift this ship. If you need to change the direction, that arrowhead got to be really strong. If anything I need to say right now, I will tell the current, they don't have to talk to us, but actually they address that properly, and I think they can then shift, they can actually shift the ship towards the direction and sprint for the next 4 years.
Yeah, you need to all of them to sing on the same hymn sheet, essentially. That's what you're kind of alluding to. And I want to get your perspective because you're going to see this whole change again. And Dato' Satina, in your observation, because you know a lot of the Ministry of Education folks there, the pipeline of the next generation of Ministry of Education officials and all that, are you hopeful or are you still worried and nervous?
I personally, I'm nervous because I think we need to get quality leaders. These quality leaders, they just do not pop out like that. They need to be groomed from the very beginning. And I think the Ministry of Education, whether the KSU or the DG or the Deputy DG, they must be able to look at those younger officers for them to be trained. You know, I know one or two of them, and put them at the right strategic place so that they could learn. In the state, they can come back to the ministry, then they will have the experience to lead, you know, at the end of it. But I don't think this is happening, because at the end of it, I think in our heart, no, Philip, I have to say this, Philip, because when I was in the Ministry of Education, I was also bogged down just thinking about what work I have to do on that day, you know. But at the end of it, when we are outside, like people like Shanas, people in the, you know, outside, they see actually the whole idea of having education in the country actually to uplift our country. The key determinant actually is education. So not only the ministry people, but the politicians also must understand. You cannot put education below your ambition. I think that is important. It doesn't matter who you are. You're the Prime Minister, or you're the PT Prime Minister, or you are the Minister of Education, Deputy Minister. I think education is not something that you can punish with whatever ambition you have. I think this is, to me, is very disgusting. Because people like us, I'm a hardcore educationist. I think it really, my heart bleeds to hear, to see what is happening, and so much so that we get so fed up of it already, you know. I think they must put education above all these things. You cannot, if you have ambition in the different things, you know, other things, don't come. Don't do these type of things. I think it is cruel. To me, that is treason. Betraying your children, betraying your teachers is an act of treason. That is how I look at it. That's how serious it is that I look at it. I think it's wrong. You pray every day. I think you need to remember.
Go ahead, sorry. Yeah, I mean, this seriousness does call for bold moves. And it sounds like we're just going through a rigmarole of just changing. So does this call for a merit-based DG, someone who's not outside the ministry, to perhaps shake it up? Or do we need to create opportunities to jump levels and pick 2 or 3 people at the mid-level and give them opportunities to shine? Is that the way we need to do to change things fundamentally?
No, actually, the DG, there are two. You have the KSU, you have the DG. The DG actually is the CEO of education for the whole country. The DG must be not only competent, they must have gone through, but they can learn all these things. Like, for example, the current DG, she could learn. It's not impossible for her not to learn. It's not rocket science, you know, but you have gone through the experience. But you, in order for you to become DG, you need to be an educationist. You need to understand the spirit of education. You cannot, a PTD officer cannot come as a DG. I totally would go against it. I think when we did act with Datuk Sri Najib that time, Tan Sri Wan Zahid, we went against it because he wanted to make it an open post. You can't do that, because if you don't understand education the way teachers understand them, it is not possible, because education is different. You have the role of education, like the ACTA, you know. Probably it's difficult for people to understand, but that is how it is. I think so. It can be done. There are so many teachers in the Ministry of Education, in the state. Groom them. Let them be groomed from the very early age. 45 years old, groom them. 40 years old. Then they can become DG. And when they're in school itself, you can even put them in Sekolah Berasrama Penuh and choose some of them to be just a place for you to groom your leaders, your future leaders, for example. So it can be done, Philip. It's not impossible.
Yes, I think there's a lot of work still to be done in the ministry, and we should basically hope to see that they kind of resolve to reset and transform. But maybe let's start from the beginning of our conversation where, you know, we talked about the pandemic, and actually one of the biggest learnings of the pandemic was that you got the community involved, you got the parents more engaged to basically transform the education outcomes of the students, right? So, Satina, teaching runs in your blood. How important is community?
Yeah, community. I would talk about it more than just community, but I would want to go into more of the partnership. Okay, the one that is already being done in the Ministry of Education, and as mentioned by Shanas now, they would want to set up what we call it? Yayasan Didik or something like that. So what is happening now, actually, this PPP, public-private partnership, has been happening for a long time, long time. We have been doing a lot of things. I've been involved with Pintar Foundation. We do great things with Pintar Foundation until today. Now I'm involved with Rhythm Foundation or Yayasan Jeyaratnam, and also been doing other things in different places. So I think what is happening now, the Ministry of Education have to have a slightly different mindset about this. We need to open up. So there are a few characters that is mentioned. It says done research research has been done, actually CAPS actually has done sort of research, what would work in the PPP. So one of the first thing, actually, you must consider that as equal partnership between the Ministry of Education and the outsiders as equal partnership, equal in the sense that Jack Ma said it. If the Ministry of Education is the right hand, the outsiders, the public sectors are the left hand. Then only you can work together. That is said by Jack Ma. It was quoted in one of the books, actually. And I have it here with me. And secondly, you must have a clear vision, shared vision between both. That means what you want to do with this PPP. Because people like Khazana, people like Sime Darby, people like a lot of other places, they spend millions and in actually putting in money for our children. So you must have a clear shared vision from the very beginning. And then you must have a communication framework. You can't put Trust School program, for example, or Pinta program together with one off PPP, the one that is setting up something in the school for just one time. You can't put them together. So you must have, you can put them in a different basket and treat them differently. And then you must also build trust. Building trust is very important because as it is now, there is that amount of trust is very, very little. And there must be transparency and accountability. And most importantly, is a mindset change. I hope this can happen and we are willing to help. I know, Philip, in our private school itself, private school, we are willing to come in. We have told actually Bahagian Pendidikan Swasta call us. And I'm formally from the Ministry of Education. I said we will be able to help train some of those teachers. When we train our teachers, we bring our teachers from outside. Free. We're not charging them anything at all. So these are some of the fundamentals that we should have and the ministry should also understand. It is already gone already those days when actually they become, you know, I always tell Shanas, I used to tell you all, sometimes when they want to come and bring money to help the school, they become beggars. You know? They keep changing the appointment when you should come and see. They ask you to wait outside for about an hour. And they are bringing money. It is like people coming to your house bringing gold. I want to bring and give you this gold. You wait for a while. I want to go and ask my mom whether I can accept or not. I want to ask so and so. So things like this needs to change. Your mindset needs to change. Because with this pandemic, we realize that actually Ministry of Education cannot work alone. Parents need to be there. Community needs to be there. And also public sector, GLCs need to be there. And they are willing to come in, but they're not going to give you money if the money is going to be kept by the Ministry of Education. They want to come in. They want to know where you spend the money.
Yep.
Ashanas, you know?
And I think you really connected all nicely that eventually you need to everybody on the same ethos that we really have to be focused on the student. You know, we talked and started about how important the community was in helping us turn this pandemic from a crisis to an opportunity. Mm-hmm. We talked about the importance of focus on the teacher, and also the principal as we move down to 2025. We mentioned and emphasized the importance of data and how we make sure we have to get the right data and ethos in place and make sure we continue doing these engagements with our stakeholders so that we create a system of excellence. But in the end, it also comes down to leadership. Leadership in the ministry, leadership among us in the community to truly transform our education system.
That was an edited recording of our fourth education webinar, which explored whether the Malaysia Education Blueprint was still relevant and also how we can overcome challenges and move forward with regard to improving our country's education system. You can watch the full webinar on facebook.com/BFM Radio. This webinar series is a collaboration between BFM Media, EdUnity Foundation and G25 Malaysia. This has been The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.